welcome to The Last Thing I Saw. This is one more episode in the Locarno Film Festival series I've been doing. I was very fortunate to attend this year. It's been a little while. I was glad to see a bunch of films there. Been catching up with others remotely now that I'm back home. But I definitely wanted to talk with a person I've had as a guest on the show before. He is a programmer at Locarno and a co-founder of the Fireflies Press Publishing House. So let's welcome Giovanni Marchini-Camia. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. I know it's probably been a marathon, not just the festival, but also the months leading up to the festival when you're watching a ton of stuff. When do you start watching things for the festival?
We watch all year, but it starts, let's say, properly around February. The Berlinale is kind of a marker when we start watching submissions and so forth. And then, but it picks up in pace across those months. And then once the Cannes program is announced in mid-April, then it gets really intense until the end of June when we close the program.
And you've had a good festival. I've just been seeing the reports also just of people attending. There are more people than ever coming this year. So it just seemed like it had a really good energy.
Yeah. No, it was really great attendance. And yeah, I mean, you were there. The rooms were really full. In the years I've done the festival, I've never seen them so full. Q&As were lively. The films were well received. It was, the definition of what a festival should be, I guess.
I haven't yet been able to talk about a movie that was one of my favorites, and that is The Human Surge 3 from Eduardo Williams, although I guess he goes by Teddy Williams, but most people will see his credit as Eduardo Williams, Argentine filmmaker. And this is a hard movie to summarize. I don't know where one would necessarily begin. I mean, how do you think of the movie generally?
Yeah, it doesn't have a narrative or much of a narrative. So yeah, it is difficult to summarize, but it's an experience. I mean, the first thing you notice immediately is the very odd image. It's filmed with a 360 camera that then is made to fit a 2D screen. So how to describe it? Yeah,
it's
heavy distortion, and the right side camera is kind of pointing in one direction and the left another. So it has this very disorienting effect. For example, there's a shot at one point of a group of people walking in a straight line, and on the right side it looks like the people are walking towards the camera, and on the left side of the screen it looks like they're walking away from the camera, as if they were doing a 90 degree turn at where the viewer is, but in fact they're all in a straight line. So it does these very disorienting effects. And Eduardo Williams follows this group of teenagers from across the world in various situations, jumping across different countries, primarily Peru, Taiwan, and Sri Lanka. It's very, very fluid. There's no markers of where you are, when you switch. There's something he did in The Human Surge as well, mm-hmm. of switching between countries, but there it was very clear where the transitions were. Whereas here, one minute you're in one place, one minute you're another, one minute they're speaking Tamil, another they're speaking Spanish. And it's really, it's a very trippy, intoxicating experience. And these images are so, so powerful. And he does all sorts of experiments with this camera that is just a 2-hour blast, basically.
Yeah, it really is. I was trying to think how to characterize the way the visuals look like. And it almost reminds me of when you do like a panorama shot with your camera, you're able to fit in more of the world in a way. So it's not like a totally flat image, but it's not like a totally like fisheye image either. It's just a very rich and it's a weird combination of depth. And also what's interesting is a lot of times it's people moving through landscapes. So you have all the busyness of what's going on around them, and a fair amount of walking shots, which also, is common with The Human Surge 1. So there's just a constant sense of moving through the world. Almost just as a metaphor of moving through people's consciousness. And I mean, I don't want to put a precise frame on the movie, but it does seem that you're moving through some kind of dreamscape or some kind of alternate reality, just because of some cues that there are in the beginning, and also the otherworldly quality, and also the fact that few people end up floating at the end of the movie. So I don't know how you interpreted all that.
Interpretation is a tough one here, but yeah, definitely, as you say, has these Lynchian touches, these you're not really sure of the reality. He plays with repetition, some lines of dialogue are repeated in different contexts. There's talk of some guy living in a strawberry house, things like that. It's quite funny. It's not really, it's at once scary, like the images are quite dark and can be quite threatening. Also because of the pixelization of the camera. But yeah, he plays with humor and the bit where people are floating. You know, you can see them for quite a long time, but they're just kind of dots on the horizon. And you're not sure, are those people floating the horizon? And eventually they appear to be. And I mean, I think you can interpret it with reflection on, you know, on the contemporary confusion of our globalized present. You know, I think you can make a very intellectual analysis if you want, but you can also just sit there and have a really great time for 2 hours.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And I mean, also there's something I think that he does that maybe even was underrated a little with The Human Surge, is just the feeling of people together and finding new ways to express that kind of closeness, people hanging out that isn't, I mean, you can't really call it like tomo, you know, like this kind of hanging sense of just time passing. There's something, I don't know, there's something more personal about a lot of, I agree that sometimes the pixelation can be unsettling, but then there are also these scenes that have great tenderness in a way that just feels new. Like there's a point where two women are floating in this, I guess, lake or something, and they're kind of just flirting with each other. And it's just very sweet. And, you know, it's surrounded by all this phantasmagoria, but at the heart of it also just seems like a search for how to show and get inside people's headspaces as they're together. It's almost more of a group movie than I felt Human Surge 1 was in terms of getting group dynamics, but there's also like solitary stuff. Yeah, I know. I really, really like this movie.
Yeah, no, for sure. This thing of being together is absolutely right, and it goes a step further than The Human Surge. I don't know if it's worth mentioning at any point that there is no Human Surge 2. There's just a one and three, and it's of a piece with his short work as well. If you've seen that, these young people hanging out, walking around, kind of going on these aimless adventures, talking the whole time, but where it goes a step further than The Human Surge is that the characters move from one space to the other, whereas in The Human Surge, everyone was limited to their own country and they would exchange over webcam and stuff like that. Whereas here, the characters freely move across countries. They speak to each other in their own languages, and there doesn't seem to be any issue with that. One guy can be speaking Tamil to a girl who's speaking Spanish, and they will have a conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, I think you can intellectualize it if you want, or you can just, you know, go with the flow.
Definitely. It's a movie I'm already looking forward to seeing again. I think he's doing something honestly really novel. Like, this is not news, because Human Surge, I think, was also just really something new, but to sustain it over like feature length. Yeah. I mean, I think oftentimes when you do, or sometimes when you do these kind of formal experiments or different technical experiments, it's hard to kind of sustain that over a feature length and create a world. It feels like more like a very specific localized rupture that you're doing. But in this case, he just creates this continuous world. So Human Surge 3, definitely a highlight for me. Now I wonder if we could talk a little bit about a movie that won the Golden Leopard, and that is Critical Zone from an Iranian director, Ali Akhmadzadeh. I'm not even sure if it was screening on the exact days I was there, so I don't feel super guilty.
It was one of the last films.
Okay. Yeah, this was a movie that I guess had a lot of advance press just because there were attempts by Iranian government to, I guess, either prevent him or prevent the film or both from screening or traveling or anything like that. Yeah, like, even it sounds like pretty late in the game. Is that right? Or am I getting that right?
Yeah, it's a very typical story for an Iranian filmmaker. Yeah, he couldn't get a visa to leave the country. And then once the announcement was made, once the program announcement was made, I believe his passport was actually taken from him. And there was no way of him attending the festival. Or, yeah, his producer, who is also a filmmaker, was also in Locarno competition a decade ago or so, with a film called Paradise. But yeah, he was here to represent the film and accept the award on his behalf.
Okay, I see. Yeah, I mean, that's been happening just...
With this film, it's really no surprise because it's a clear provocation, the film. It's an act of rebellion. He does a lot of things in the film that are not allowed, like showing women without a headscarf, showing drug use, prostitution. And yeah, the way it was shot also, I don't know if you know much about the production. Mm-mm. It was shot, they were hiding the fact that they were shooting. I think it was shot in episodes, like individual short films that then were pasted together later. And they had to find all these ways of, they found a way of sticking a camera on the steering wheel. You know, the way that he also got around restrictions. It was shooting at night, shooting amongst friends, a lot of tactics to get away with doing a lot of forbidden things. So yeah, I think they very much knew what was going to happen once the film was finished and showing it to the world. And I think they themselves described the film as an act of rebellion.
Yeah, it's definitely a kind of grungier side of Iran that you're seeing, but at the same time, like a very familiar and kind of run-of-the-mill side in that he's like a weed dealer. And that's a great character to center a movie on because the filmmaker uses it, that conceit, to visit with a lot of people in Iranian society. So it's kind of a great leveler in a way, because he visits, you know, he's picking up people in his car, or he's picks up, I guess, a flight attendant that he has a business relationship with, I guess you'd say. You know, he ends up visiting like what looks like a sort of upper middle class widow whose son is having some troubles. So you get exposed. And then, you know, at another point, he's under a bridge. It seems like he's just sort of handing out weed. I don't know. So yeah, it's kind of a remarkable cross section. It starts very mysteriously. I mean, unless there was something I was missing, the opening really, I mean, it's like this long journey in a tunnel, first following an ambulance, but then the ambulance, were they using the ambulance to like smuggle? Is that what's going on there?
Yeah, I understood that that's where he was getting his gear.
Yeah.
And yeah, that opening is terrific. This like shot through the tunnel, is traveling with all these people. It's like an army of smugglers or something coming out of the depths of Tehran.
Yeah, it's a great shot. So that's how it starts off. So then you're kind of piecing things together, although yeah, quickly you realize what he's up to. And then obviously he visits like, you know, elderly person's home. So there's that. So it's really kind of this like picaresque, that's his daily life. And there's this ongoing GPS voice, which becomes, yeah, pretty open metaphor about a kind of lack of direction, like down to the very first shot. But it was funny, like I couldn't help but think of another movie at this year's edition that which won the, I guess, a grand jury prize, the Radu Jude film, which also, you know, for most of it centers on someone who's driving around and I think even has like GPS and is also this kind of figure who is letting us interface with lots of aspects of society and all the ways that injustices kind of play out on a personal level and then, you know, giving you a glimpse of how things are working on a more systemic level as well. So that was kind of a funny similarity between the two films in a way.
Yeah, it's interesting, that parallel for sure. Although I think the Critical Zone makes a much more mosaic portrait because there isn't much of a narrative here either. It's just his errands. And you see so many different strata of society. And basically everybody really needs his product to make it through the day.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, you could probably definitely make that sort of movie for the U.S. or I guess for any number of countries. Maybe it should be a whole series just about coping. So that was the Critical Zone, which won the Golden Leopard this year. And then I wanted to hear if I can just take advantage of your extensive viewing, particularly one movie that I think you're pretty keen on, Good Place from Katharina Huber. Yeah, what can you say about that one?
Yeah, no, that's the one I'm excited to talk about because that was really one of the discoveries for me. This is, it's worth noting that the other two films we discussed were in the main competition, whereas this one's in the competition for first and second features called Cineasti del Presente, Filmmakers of the Present. It's a debut feature by a filmmaker who previously had made a number of shorts that were all animation. And That's really interesting to know. Just when you see this film, it's so impressively cinematic. It's a very minimalist film. She made it with very few means. It looks like a film maybe you would shoot with your friends and in the countryside. It makes a great use of nature. But just the fact that she can frame a field and you're in awe. I don't know if there's camera movement in the film. I think they're all static shots. One more impressive than the next. And without any special effects, I don't know what budget she was working with, but it must have been low. She builds this very, it's like a mix of a sci-fi and paranoia thriller, but really it's just young people in the countryside hanging out, doing odd things you can't really piece together. There is talk on the radio of people disappearing. There must be some sort of poultry disease because a chicken arrives at one point and causes a panic. And then after that, you see feathers and like broken eggs all over the place. The film is told in a countdown. It's 10 chapters counting down. And there's the talk of a rocket ship that's going to go on the other side of the solar system. In fact, that's a clip of Elon Musk that she pulled down from YouTube.
Oh, wow.
And the characters are expecting this rocket ship and as like a way of escape. But you don't know what it is they want to escape. There's just this like constant anxiety of things being bad and like of there being some sort of cataclysm, some sort of catastrophe beyond the borders of the film. So this looks like some sort of natural, I mean, it's a very bucolic place, a village in the countryside, but something bad is happening and something you can't put your finger on it. And it's a constant atmosphere. So yeah, it's just, for me, this is a filmmaker with huge talent showing that you don't need any means to create incredible atmosphere, incredible emotion. And it's also just so perplexing on a narrative level because you, as I keep saying, you don't know what's going on. So you keep watching with interest. I've seen the film 4 times. I still couldn't give you like a proper synopsis, and it's really, really fun. And I was worried that maybe it might be a bit too perplexing a film, maybe. But it won 2 awards at the award ceremony. So clearly it struck a note with the jury as well. And I hosted the premiere and the Q&A afterwards, and we had to quit because we had to let the next people in for the next screening. But the questions kept on coming. So clearly it made a very strong impact.
That's really great. I mean, when a movie that people aren't really anticipating, then everyone connects with it. That's really great. I mean, just curious, like with this one, so you must have been aware of the filmmaker from her previous animation work. Is that someone like you would keep up with, or Locarno would keep up with and check in what their next film is, or do they like let you know? I'm just kind of curious how it works sometimes.
It can work like that. In this case, it was simply a submission.
Oh, wow.
Came out of nowhere, and you know, and then I looked up her profile and what she'd done in the past, and the shorts were well received, and I think she went to Oberhausen with the last one, so you know, still important festivals. But she just submitted, and since I take care of the German films submissions, I came across it, and it just, you know, immediately I was like, wow, what is this? It's kind of a UFO, and the same, like I would say that Teddy Williams' film is a UFO, mm-hmm. and so is this one, but a completely different kind. We just have these static shots, beautiful shots, and these weird happenings that are just suggested. It's all like happening in the off screen.
Wow, that's great. Well, that must have been really exciting, just coming across something like that. That seems like it might be a nice sort of landing point for this episode, actually, to end with the discovery. And there are obviously more films to see and to talk about and to read about, I'm sure. I think I forgot to mention that the Katharina Huber film, it was a Best Emerging Director Award, and then also a Best Performance Award.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And yeah, they were thrilled, obviously.
That's great. All right. Well, thank you so much for talking. And hopefully next year I'll get to cross paths with you more at Locarno proper, but this will have to do for now.
Yeah, hopefully. I look forward to it.
You've been listening to The Last Thing I Saw with your host, Nicholas Rapold. Please consider signing up at rapold.substack.com. Thank you for listening.